So we began a series at the beginning of 2017 in the Gospel of John. And then we took a break come about mid-October. We took a break and we went through some peculiar people. And so the last time we've been in the Gospel of John, and then now following the peculiar people, we had the Advent series. But we, in October 15th, we took a break from the Gospel of John. We're going to get back into the Gospel of John. But where we had left off in the Gospel of John was this situation, the sequence, where what we found was we had this man who had died. And Jesus got word of that problem. And this man was named Lazarus, and Lazarus had two sisters. He had an oldest sister, Martha, and then a middle sister, Mary. It was believed that Lazarus was the youngest of the three of them. It's also believed that their parents likely had passed away, so it was just the three of them taking care of each other. And Lazarus, as the sole male proprietor in that family, would have been, in a sense, their only way or their only means of income. And so his passing was a significant loss financially to the family, not only that, but also then obviously the emotional things that would go along with that. And so this was a significant event that was happening. And so leading up to this moment when Lazarus dies, Jesus had just left Jerusalem. And if you remember that time that he was in Jerusalem, there were some things happening. He was healing some people. He had in one point during these festivals, you remember there was the Feast of the Tabernacles. And during this time, Jesus at this point had said, I am, in a sense, this living water. This water that you're pouring out over the altar, that's symbolic of me. That life-giving water, that's really me. He gives a series of these I am statements. He also then says, during this festival of the rededicating of the temple, which is where, if you remember, we talked about how the Jews had retaken the temple from the Greeks, and in that process, they rededicate it, it might have been the Persians, rededicate the temple back to the Lord, and this is where this celebration of Hanukkah comes from, because at that point, after they rededicated the temple, they light these candles. Well, there's only enough oil for a day, but this oil that was only enough for a day lasted for 8 days, and that's why the celebration of Hanukkah goes 8 days. But there's a celebration of lights, and so during the pinnacle of this celebration, Jesus then also looks up at these lights that they light up in the night that shines all through Jerusalem, and Jesus points to the lights and says, I am the light of the world. Again, pointing back to him, that this light that you're celebrating, this God that you're celebrating, it's really me. And this angered the Jews. This angered the Jerusalem leaders, and they're setting a plot to now kill him. And in fact, they tried to seize him, is what it says at the end of chapter 10. But it says they were not able to, and Jesus slipped away. And what Jesus does then is he actually goes back to where it all began. Remember this? This is what we discussed on October the 15th. He goes back to where it all began, back to where John the Baptist had baptized him. John the Baptist is dead. He has been beheaded. But he goes back to where it all began, where he initially started calling his disciples into this region of the Jordan River, in this area of Perea is what it's called. And I'll show you where that's at in here in a little bit. But in this process, so what we find in John chapter 11, this is review from October the 15th, we saw these verses here. So verse 3 and 4 of John chapter 11. And this is what it says. So the sisters, this is Mary and Martha, they sent word, Lord, the one you love is sick. Now it was important to note, they sent this word knowing full well that this was a dangerous thing for Jesus to even consider coming back. Because they knew that in Jerusalem the Jews were trying to seize him, that they were trying to kill him. Mary and Martha would have known that. And so Lazarus must be extremely sick for them even to consider sending out this, hey, Jesus, we could use your help here memo, okay? So they understand the severity of what they're really asking. So when he, Jesus, heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory that God's Son may be glorified through it. Remember, we had this light under this cloth. We demonstrated this reality that God's glory is always there, but Jesus, in a sense, by doing what he's about to do, is going to take and he's going to peel back that cloth and reveal that glory that's always been there. God's glory is always there, but sometimes I think we shroud our eyes so we cannot see it. Well, Jesus is going to pull back that shroud, if you will, to allow these people to see God in all of his glory. Much like we talked about Moses on Mount Sinai, where God revealed his glory to Moses. His glory was there, but suddenly he just peeled it back so Moses could see it. And it says that Moses came down the mountain and his face was shining as effect of interaction with God that way. And so who are Mary and Martha? Let's just touch on that again briefly just to recap. Mary was the one, if you remember the story, and we'll get to this in a couple few weeks, but Mary is the one that took this expensive bottle of perfume and broke it open and poured it on Jesus' feet. Here's what we see in John chapter 12. It says, then Mary took out a pint of pure nard, which is a perfume, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of aroma. We're going to talk more about that in a little bit here this morning. It's going to be really exciting, very wonderful. You guys are going to love it. And then also Mary and Martha, we've learned a little bit about them in Luke chapter 10. All right, Martha is a busybody. She is I don't know if I'd say a workaholic, but she's a work before play type of person. Okay, there's work to be done. You do the work before you do any other relaxation. It's got to happen in that order, and Mary is not that way. They are sisters, and they kind of clash that way. And so here was the story in Luke chapter 10. We get our first picture of Mary and Martha. It says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, they came to a village. We're going to hear about that village. It's actually named Bethany. They came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made, okay? Think of, you know, Christmas Eve or Christmas Day or whatever, Easter, whatever holiday, you know how you have people coming over, you have to get the house ready, you have to get the meal ready, and you have all of these preparations, and you have someone sitting down watching football. You know, and finally the husband gets sick of doing all the work himself, and he says, wife, why are you just sitting down watching football? Right? That's exactly how it works. So, but Martha was distracted by all these preparations that had to be made, and she came to him and she asked, Lord, don't you care, I love this, don't you care that all my sister is doing is sitting there while I'm doing all the work? All right? And Jesus then would end up then responding and says, oh, Martha, you don't see it. Okay, there's a bigger picture going on here. What she's actually chosen is the better. And so football is better, is what. That's not what he said. I made that part up. I'm going to get in trouble for that one. Okay. This is a picture now, just to give you an idea of where it's at in the context of where we're at. Okay, so here's Jerusalem. This is where Jesus was during these festivals at the temple, which is in Jerusalem. He gets in trouble there, and so Jesus actually flees from Jerusalem. He goes into this area of Perea. So this is where, this region here is where Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist. Notice we talked about it briefly last time. There's two Bethanies. I feel like we have to have this review because it's been several months since we did it, okay? So there's two Bethanies. We talked about a little bit as to which one is really the one that it was at. Most scholars believe that Bethany here, and we're going to see that in John chapter 11 here too, is probably the Bethany where Mary and Martha lived. And so Jesus is out here somewhere. And so these sisters send word to Jesus. Jesus, the one you love is sick and it's not going well. Okay? And this is verse 6 then of chapter 11. And it says, so when Jesus heard this message, so the messenger comes and tells Jesus, Jesus, guess what? Lazarus, that man, your friend, he's really sick. It's not looking good for him. when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for two more days. It's important to note, there is a Greek word, a Greek particle, and it's this word right here, this word so. Some translations will use the word yet. It's important to note, in most NIV Bibles, if you're using the NIV this morning, this word is only translated, used four times in this chapter, but it's only translated once in the NIV. I don't know why. So I have chosen to use the NASB, which I don't normally use this morning, the New American Standard Bible, because the New American Standard translates it all four times. And the reason that I'm using it that way, and that's significant, because this, though it's a kind of an unusual Greek particle, what this little word means is there's intentionality, there's purpose behind what's going on here. And so when you see this word so, and you'll see it translated sometimes as yet, sometimes you'll see this word therefore, and we're going to try to point them out each time as we go by, but it's important because what it's pointing out is Jesus stayed there two more days intentionally because God had a bigger plan, a bigger purpose that's already laid out for him. So Jesus is following God's plan with this, you know, this idea. So when he heard this, it's like yet then he heard this. This all pointing to Jesus is doing exactly what the Father wants him to do. This is not reactionary, I want you to grasp that. Jesus knows exactly what he's doing. This is not reactionary. He's like, oh, I guess I shouldn't have stayed those 2 more days. Lazarus died, you know. And just to be clear, we talked about this months ago. Just to be clear, just because Jesus stayed 2 more days, it's not why Lazarus died. In fact, likely, Lazarus died as soon as that messenger or shortly after that messenger left, because it would have been a day's walk from Bethany to where Jesus was at. Jesus stayed 2 more days, and there's going to be 1 more day back, and we're going to find out today that he was dead for 4 days. And so even if Jesus had gone right away, likely he'd been there 2 days, he's already been dead 4. It doesn't change the fact that Lazarus is dead, but Jesus is doing it very intentionally because there's a bigger purpose going on here that he wants the people to see. And then verse 16, this idea of there's this perspective. Mary and Martha had a perspective. In other words, this is imminent. If Jesus doesn't come, Lazarus is going to die. That's their perspective. And when Lazarus is dead, this is bad. We need to have something happen here. There's this imminent, we've got to happen now type perspective. The disciples had a different perspective. They're away. They're disconnected from that situation. Their perspective is, if we go back to Jerusalem, we're dead. You know, and in fact, even in that arguing back and forth, do you remember, Jesus, that they tried to seize you? And this is the response finally at the end. Jesus says, all right, guess what? It's time to go. We stayed here 2 more days. Let's go back to Jerusalem. And this is what Thomas says. He says, then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, let's go that we may die with him. There was this perspective like, we're going to our death right now. That's what's going to be happening. And yet they saw Jesus as this is who we're following. I guess this is it. Bye, Mom. Bye, Dad. Won't see you again. And so then, and Jesus had his own perspective with this, and you know, and just rehashing it, repointing it out. So then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. You know, his disciples said, well, if he's sick, he's just going to get better. In other words, why do we have to go to Jerusalem? I would rather not go because it's dangerous there. And Jesus says, don't you get it? Lazarus is dead. All right? He's not waking up unless I go there to raise him. And then verse 15, and for your sake, I'm glad that I was not there so that you may believe. Jesus has this bigger perspective. But let us go to him. And then verse 4, it says, when he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory that the Son of Man, the Son of God, may be glorified through it. And so here we go. Getting into, that was all review, getting into where we're at this morning. That's our context. But what we're going to see Jesus do this morning, he's going to literally do the impossible. You know, and we look at the miracles. Yes, all of Jesus' miracles are, in a sense, impossible. Okay? But there's an escalation that John points out with his impossible miracles, and we're going to touch on those briefly. But there's an escalation. So each time he does an impossible thing, it's like, wow, that was impossible. And then Jesus does something even more impossible. And I know that's kind of contradictory, because impossible is really, by definition, not possible. You know, so if we have all of these impossible things, and yet he does something that seems to be more impossible, and we're going to see him do that today, and he's setting the stage for something even more impossible. It's a wonderful picture, so I hope you grasp that here as we go on this morning. So, here's where we're at, verse 17, we're going to be going through 17 through 44 this morning. Some parts will be going relatively quick, but here's what it says. So, that's that word, that's that Greek particle, all right? So, and there's intentionality behind it. So, Jesus is doing exactly what God wants him to be doing. So it's a yet or a therefore. When Jesus came, he found that he had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Okay? That's important to note, this idea of 4 days. In the Jewish culture at this time, there was this belief that the spirit, when someone died, that they believed that the spirit would kind of come and go from a person, seeing if that person would be alive again, the spirit could re-enter them. Okay, it's a bad theology, but it is a theology just the same. All right? And so what Jesus is doing is he's not accepting their theology by doing this, but what he's saying is, you guys can believe what you want to believe, and I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take what it is that you, even these skewed beliefs that you have, set them aside, because I'm going to make it impossible. In your mind, I'm going to do something that you guys cannot accept as being even remotely possible. I'm going to make sure that there's no question about it. He's going to be dead for 4 days. So that's kind of the rationale behind this. So he comes there, he finds that Lazarus has already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was near Jerusalem. We talked about that, about 2 miles. That's, John kind of really points it out as to which Bethany it should be looked at. And many of the Jews, because we're only 2 miles from Jerusalem, many of the Jews is what it says. And usually in John, when we look at this word Jews, it's referring to many of these Jews are Jewish leaders. Okay, they don't have to be, but many people, these Jews, are, because it's talking about Jerusalem, are from Jerusalem. That's an important to note, because, you know, Jesus, yeah, he's not going into Jerusalem. He's going into Bethany. But in Bethany, all kinds of these Jewish people are there. This is a huge threat that Jesus is ready to step himself into. All right? And we're going to see that more next week. So many Jews had come to Mary and Martha to console them concerning their brother. And so it was also the Jewish custom, and we talked about this before, I think last Easter. It was also the Jewish custom where they would actually, in some cases, I mean, they would gather around each other to weep and to wail with each other during these times. And in some cases, some families, if they were well-to-do families, they would actually hire people to come and wail for them. And some would bring in these flutes, you know, just they'd play these dirges and these songs of mourning. And there was all this to-do of this wailing and mourning and aching. And in some cases, they would literally hire these people. So what would happen then, and we'll see this in a little bit. So when they would go, this couple, they would kind of follow Mary and Martha around. When they go to the tomb to cry, this group would engage that with them. You know, in the Greek, there's a phrase, it's called sitting shiva, which is this idea of sitting next to a person and you don't say anything. All you're doing is crying with them. You know, if someone has lost someone, and so you come alongside them, it's just like, I got nothing to say. I'm just here to mourn with you. And there's this huge group of people that are with Mary and Martha. And this suggests several things. It suggests that they may be a very well-to-do family. It also suggests, because of the fact that Lazarus is in a tomb with a stone, again, this could be a fairly well-to-do family. There could be some wealth behind what they have. Just a little side note. So here we go. Verse 20, Martha, therefore, when she heard that Jesus was coming, went to meet him. But Mary stayed at the house. This is interesting because this points the fact that she hears Jesus is coming. She goes out to meet Jesus. Martha knows the danger of what is happening here with Jesus coming. And I'm convinced that when Martha goes to meet Jesus, she's actually doing it somewhat secretly so that Jesus doesn't have to necessarily come in and be encountered, be seen by all these Jews. I think there's a secrecy piece going on here. And so there's this protection piece. So Martha goes out and meets Jesus while they're still away. They're not in Bethany just yet. Martha then says to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. You look at this, it's like, wow, that's brave of Martha to rebuke her, but I'm not sure that that's a rebuke as much as it's just a lament. You know, I'm living with such regret. I wish things could have been different. I wish that you had been here. If you had been here, you know, Lazarus wouldn't have died. You would have healed his sickness. You know, that shows great faith that Martha has in Jesus. You know, even at that statement right there, if you had been here, I have such faith in you that you would have had the power to change that. You know, she's struggling there. She's lamenting. She wished that things could be different. It's like, you spend all your money and on something, you find out that it breaks right away. You know, it's just like, wow, I just totally invested my money in a piece of garbage. You know, and then you find out, well, I can return it. And you find out that to return it costs as much as the product did initially. And you find yourself just like, I wish I'd never bought it in the first place. And it's kind of this idea here, this lament, was like, I just wish I could go back in time and change things. I wish things had just happened differently. I wish Blair Walsh hadn't missed the field goal. You know, and there's kind of that similar feeling. It's like, I wish I could just go back and have things just play out differently. So, and then she says, but even now, this shows just great faith yet that Martha has. She says, even now, I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give it to you. This may mean that Martha, in some ways, just like, I know that you could probably raise the dead. I don't know if it's going to happen. It's just that doesn't happen. That's kind of stuff. He's been dead for 4 days. You know, there's pieces in here. It just shows this great faith that Martha has, but it's not fully developed, is what I would say. And we're going to see that come in here a little bit more because Martha's going to have her socks blown off, and it's just going to be fabulous. So here we go, verse 23. So Jesus says to her, your brother will rise again. In this culture, this could have been, you know, they believed in the resurrection. And this really, in the equivalent for us would be like, you know, just think of this, you're going to a funeral, you're with someone you care about, and you're trying to comfort them. There's not a lot of words to bring comfort a lot of times. And so one of the things that we say at a funeral is that, you know, they're in a better place. And that's probably true. You know, in many cases, that very well could be true. But it's this cliche almost that we use as comfort measures. And likewise, this is very cliche for their culture in the sense of it's a comfort measure. You know, your brother will rise again. And because Mary's response suggests that and says, I know he will rise at the resurrection. Let's say, I know he's in a better place. I know, and that brings me some comfort, but it doesn't make the pain go away. And so what's happening here is Jesus is actually using this phrase, And it's really come to my attention, and some of the commentators that I've read and such, is really fascinating, because overall, through the Gospel of John in particular, what we find is Jesus is so often misunderstood. And he will always be misunderstood. And even in our culture, we will misunderstand Jesus until we can come to accept him for who he really is, because that's where it changes things. And so right now, this is totally lost on Martha. What Jesus is about to do is totally lost on Martha. Because she, though she has great faith in him, she does not fully understand who he is. And he's going to reveal that to her today. Because if she understood who he really was, then perhaps her faith would be placed a little bit differently. You know, do you follow what I'm saying? So there's this idea that until I can come to accept Jesus, who he really is, I don't know that I can fully, all these sayings will be cryptic, put it that way. You know, Jesus, his statement here is a mystery to Martha because she does not fully understand his identity. And so here is what we have. This is how Jesus responds. Very cryptic as well. And Jesus says to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even if he dies. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die." And he asks her, "Do you believe this?" So grasp what's going on here. So they've just been talking about the resurrection. They just said, you know, Lazarus will rise again. Your brother will rise again. You know, and Mary or Martha says, "Yeah, I know. I know there's going to be this end time where that dead will rise again. I believe that. Thank you for your comfort. I really appreciate that." Jesus confronts that and says, "You're missing it. Because I am the resurrection." In other words, there is no resurrection. You know, we hope as Jews, there is no resurrection unless it's going through me. In other words, I am that resurrection. I am the creator of the resurrection. There won't be a resurrection unless I am who I say I am. And then he ups the scale a little bit more. In fact, your brother who is dead, I'll tell you what, there's one place that life comes from. Not only am I a life giver, you know, yeah. I am life. It's bigger than that. It's not just like, oh, Jesus gives us life. Yes, he does. But you don't understand, there is no life, period, without Jesus. And so what Jesus is laying out is like, Martha, this is bigger than that. We're talking about that resurrection. I am that resurrection. We're talking about life. I am the life. And there is no other way not to get life. I mean, life is me. And then he says to her, he says, "Do you believe this?" That's a huge question. Because she's got great faith already. Right? Do you believe this? In other words, what he's saying to her is, "Do you believe that I am who I say I am?" And her answer is yes. "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, even he who comes into the world." Yes. And we're faced with that same question. Do you believe that Jesus is who he says he is? That's a vital question. He asks it of us, just as he asked it to Martha. Do you believe that Jesus is who he says he is, that he is the resurrection, that he is the life, not just a giver of life as we live and breathe, not just a giver of even spiritual life, but it's just bigger than that. And her answer is yes. And what would your answer be? That's a serious question. We go on. So when she had said this is Martha, when Martha had said this, she went away and called her sister Mary, okay? So Martha has come, she's left Bethany, she's encountered Jesus somewhere along the way, she's had this encounter with him, and then she goes back to talk to her sister Mary. This is wonderful as well, okay? So she goes back to tell her sister Mary, saying secretly, all right, catch that? She, in other words, she's saying this so that all these Jews don't hear what she is having to say. Because this is dangerous, this is volatile. The fact that Jesus came back is like, wow, Jesus really cares for us, Jesus really loves us. He's risking his life just to come here. It's too bad that Lazarus is already dead. You know, that would totally be better if he was still sick and Jesus could heal him and then we could escape away again. But he goes to her sister secretly, and the teacher, the teacher is here. And that's an interesting point. The fact that this language is used, because in the Jewish culture, rabbis would not teach women. All right, that was just women, sorry, this is how it was in the culture. We do not agree with this, right, gentlemen? We do not agree with this. But there was this concept in this culture that rabbis don't teach women because women couldn't comprehend the teaching of the rabbi anyway. That was man's work, if you will. Okay. Now we all know better. That's why we have most of our teachers in the U.S. are probably women, and that's why we're all smarter than we ever used to be. Okay? Yeah, did I? That was good, right? Good. Woohoo! All right. So, the teacher, she said, the teacher is calling for you. In other words, okay, so Martha comes back, and she's saying to Mary secretly, Mary, Jesus is, like, he's just outside the city, and he wants to see you. You know, and so catch what Mary does here now, too. Okay, so you think, like, if she's telling him secretly, what would Mary, you know, then do? Well, you gotta sneak away. Nope, Mary, after hearing this, she gets up quickly, and she basically runs out the door. And all of these mourners who see her, they think that she's going out to cry by the tomb, and so they go and follow her. Oops. You can tell who the older sister is, who's already methodical and planned out and such, and you can tell who is the impulsive sister, right? Because those of us who are impulsive would do the exact same thing, and we'd get up, it's like, sweet, Jesus is here. Oh dear, they all caught me. Okay, but this is what we're looking at here. So she got up quickly, and she was coming to him, and now Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. And when the Jews who were with her in the house and consoling her, when they saw that Mary got up quickly and went out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb there to weep. Now watch this encounter. So, therefore, when Mary came where Jesus was, she saw him. She fell at his feet. Just a beautiful picture. You know, we saw this before. Remember, in Luke chapter 10, this is Mary's position. You know, she's not the analytical, let's talk about this, let's analyze this. She's just like, Jesus, she falls at his feet, mourning and hurting. And she says the same thing that her sister did. I'm sure the sisters were talking about it before. Man, if Jesus could have been here, this would all be different. And so it just kind of comes out. And again, it's not this rebuke. It's this lament. It's like, oh, I wish things could be different. She says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. This is one of my favorite verses in the whole passage. Grasp this. It says, when Jesus, therefore, this is that Greek particle, okay? This shows that intentionality of the plan, because God had this all worked out from the beginning, and Jesus is following exactly what God wants him to do. So when Jesus, therefore, saw her weeping, and the Jews, remember this crowd of Jews, some who are probably his enemy, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled. Here it is, that phrase, that wording, deeply moved, is not doing justice to this passage of Scripture. That phrase, that word, the Greek word for that, which I cannot pronounce, I've tried to memorize it and I can't get it, so I'm not even going to try because you wouldn't understand it anyhow. This word for deeply moved in the Greek is only used 5 times in the New Testament, and it is not a picture of sorrow. It is actually a picture of anger. And this just totally changed my perspective on this passage. There's something going on here. So this is deeply moved. In other words, Jesus is bothered. He is troubled in his spirit. He is deeply moved to the point of actual anger. And some have believed that he's angry at the lack of faith of Mary and Martha. I don't think so. Because if you remember that time when Jesus is in the boat with his disciples, okay? And there's this huge storm, and Jesus is sleeping in the bottom of the boat, and all the disciples are thinking, Jesus, don't you care that we're about ready to die? And Jesus stands up, he calms the storm, and he says, you know, you have little faith. The disciples didn't have any faith there, and he wasn't angry with them. And we don't see the evidence there. And likewise, what we see here is we see Mary and Martha saying, Lord, if you had been there, things would have been different. We recognize you have the power to have changed these things. Don't really know why you didn't. It's hurtful a little bit. But there's this reality. They had great faith. And so Jesus looked at it. Is he mad at them? I don't think so. Is he mad at the Jews? I don't think so. I think what Jesus is mad at is death. I think he's looking at this reality of death, something that God had never created or intended to happen. You follow that? When God created mankind, he put them in the garden. He did not create, hey, guess what? I'm going to create you, and then I'm going to instill death, and you guys are going to suffer, and you guys are going to hurt. That's not what his plan was from the beginning. His plan was not to put Adam and Eve there and watch you suffer through death. So I look at this, and I see Jesus, he's upset, and he's angry at death, and he's going to do something about it. I see now there's this picture. You know, Jesus has walked into Jerusalem, and here he is like Rocky Balboa. He's ready for the music to start. Because Rocky can't do anything until the music starts because he's getting pummeled, you know. I'm not saying Jesus is getting pummeled. Don't misunderstand me there. But there's this picture of Rocky, And he's just getting beat up. I mean, it's like, how can he be a world champion if he just gets, you know, beat up all the time? Well, then you play the music, and then he totally transforms into like the Incredible Hulk, and he then suddenly wins. Okay? But there's this idea. He is angered by this fact, this reality that death is winning right now with his friends, and they're suffering, they're mourning, they're hurting, and he's sick of it. And so I'm going to do something about that. It's interesting. Here's the emphasis on the words. Remember we talked about before where Mary broke that perfume on Jesus' feet. Here's evidence of what I'm talking about. So in Mark chapter 14, it's also, Mark is referring to this same situation where Mary is pouring perfume on Jesus' feet. And this is the wording. It says, but some were indignant. This is after Mary had poured out the perfume, very expensive perfume. And they were indignant, remarking to one another, why has this perfume been wasted? For this perfume might have been sold for over 300 denarii and the money given to the poor. And they were scolding Mary. This word scolding, there's like coming down on Mary. Mary, what is wrong with you? Why would you pour out this expensive perfume? It could have been sold and given away. That's the same word as moved deeply in John chapter 11. It's the same word. And so what I'm getting at is when I see Jesus being deeply moved, I see him ready to give death a lashing. So here we go, verse 34. Jesus says, where have you laid him? They said, Lord, come and see. And Jesus wept. I don't think he wept for Lazarus, you know, so much because he knew what was going to be going on here. I think he wept because he saw what death was doing to all of those people that he loved around them. And let me say this. I am convinced that Jesus would weep for you as well. And in fact, so much so, I think that he does weep for you. When you're hurting, I think Jesus feels it. You know, I'm not saying such a pain like there's pain in heaven. I'm not going there, but I'm just saying Jesus knows what that hurt and pain feels like. Death is not what God had intended. Death is not what Jesus wants for us. And so when we hurt because of it, because of what sin has done in our lives, when we hurt, Jesus understands our pain. By the way, you know, that's like the shortest verse in the Bible. So if you're ever looking at it like you need to memorize something, start there. Okay. So John chapter 11, verse 36 then says, so the Jews were saying, see how he loved him. And they're absolutely right. It was apparent. When Jesus had that kind of emotion, that kind of passion for his people that he weeps. One interesting note is that word weep in that last one, that wept, it's a different word than what is being used through the rest of the passage. There's lots of weeping going on in this passage. That's the only time that word wept is used in the entire Bible. And it's used for Jesus. And basically it means, yes, he was shedding tears, but he was not weeping and wailing as someone would without hope. Okay? You got to grasp that. So yeah, we can have sorrow. It's okay to be sorrowful. It's okay to mourn. But we see in the New Testament too, is we don't mourn as if people without hope, we mourn with people that have hope. Yep, there's going to be pain, there's going to be death, there's going to be sorrow, there's going to be hurt. That's absolutely right. But yet even with that, we have a hope that lies beyond our hurt, and that's what we can cling to, and that's exactly, I think, the picture that we're seeing here with Jesus. So some of the Jews were saying, see how he loved him. Verse 37, and some of them said, I love this, okay. Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind have kept this man from dying? Yes. Yes, he could have. Remember that blind man, okay? It's believed that some he may not have had eyeballs, okay? That he may have been born, in a sense, without eyeballs, and God, in a sense, created. Whether he created eyeballs for him or whether he created sight, Jesus did a creating work for him and actually gave him to the man, and so suddenly this man can see again. He did something that only God can do. He did something that was impossible. He had no eyes before. And Jesus gave him eyes to see. And I was going to escalate that even a step further. So could he have? Absolutely he could have. But he didn't, because it's not part of those so, therefore, and yet statements. But this one is. So, again, showing this intentionality of Jesus. So Jesus began, again, being deeply moved. There it is again. This anger kind of riles up inside of him at death and what death is causing. And he comes to the tomb, and now it was a cave, and there was a stone lying against it. And this is the moment that the Rocky music would start, because he says, remove the stone. Okay, so you have this Rocky music starting, the Rocky theme song. Da, 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 da. Okay, here's Jesus standing at the tomb. And then we have Martha saying, the sister saying, oh, Lord, he's been dead for 4 days. There's going to be a stench. And then that's where the record kind of scrapes from. Oh, wait, he stinks. Are we sure we want to do this? Are you sure you're ready for what it is you're going to encounter? And Jesus says, did I not tell you that if you believed, you will see that glory of God revealed? The glory is there. Martha, let me reveal it. And so they remove the stone. And then Jesus raised his eyes. I love his prayer. Okay? He's not even, there's no look at me type stuff going on here. This is, understand, I'm doing this for their benefit, Lord. I want you to understand. I want people to hear what it is that I'm praying. He says, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. And this is a profound statement because he says, I knew that you always hear me. And what that means is to these Jews who are standing there listening, there's only one person, one kind of person, according to the Jews, that could be, that God would listen to. You know what that is? A righteous person. So what Jesus is saying in front of all these Jews is, I'm a righteous man, and God and I are connected. Okay? So you think I'm a sinner, you call me, I'm healing on the Sabbath, you call me a blasphemer, all this stuff, guess what? You're wrong. I'm righteous. God is listening to me right now. I hear him, he hears me. But because of the people standing around, I said it so that they may believe that you sent me. And here we go. When he had said these things, he cried out in a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. It's believed, a lot of scholars will write this, a lot of commentators, they believe that if Jesus hadn't used Lazarus' name, all of the dead would have come forth. I can't back that up. I don't know. But does Jesus have the power for that? Absolutely. But could you imagine if he hadn't said Lazarus and that was true? It's like, well, this really got awkward quick, okay? But it is believed that if Jesus hadn't used the name Lazarus, that all of the dead would have woken. So there's such power in his voice. In his voice as he speaks, just as God spoke the world into existence, Jesus speaks and says, Lazarus, come forth. Lazarus is raised from the dead. I don't believe there was any sign of rot left on him. Maybe his linens still stunk. Or is it stank? Whatever. Whatever. Had a bad smell. But there was no evidence that Lazarus was not a new creation at that point. And then the dead man, I love this, and I switched back to the NIV, okay, just for this one verse, because I think the NIV just translates this just beautifully. And so it says, the dead man came out. You know? That guy who was dead, Lazarus, the dead man came out, his hands and his feet wrapped in strips of linen, so he can't, I mean, he's got to be hopping or hobbling or waddling or something, okay? His hand, I mean, he's wrapped up. He comes out, his face is shrouded, and Jesus says to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. So what do we do with this? I think there's three aspects that we can kind of look at for ourselves this morning. Number one is if you're hurting, I think Jesus really wants us to understand he knows your pain. Okay? He's experienced your pain. If you're dealing with sorrow, if you're dealing with the pain of losing someone you love, if you're dealing with even physical pain, he's experienced it all. If you're dealing with emotional pain, if you're dealing with resentment, Jesus feels your pain. Okay? He's experienced it. And because he's experienced it, he's mourning right along with you, and you can take a comfort in knowing that Jesus weeps for us just as he wept for Mary and Martha. I don't want you to misunderstand this, because that can be taken as bad theology. I'm not saying he's up in heaven crying tears right now, but there is a reality that he has experienced that kind of loss that you are experiencing. He's experienced that kind of pain that you're experiencing. The second is that interaction that he has with Martha. And he says, he lays it out to Martha, Martha, I am the resurrection and I am the life. Okay? There is no resurrection except for me, or aside from me. There is no life outside of me. And then he asks her the question, do you believe this? She says yes. But what do you say? That's a very real question. And maybe today this is, you know, you've been wrestling with this. I don't know where you're at, but maybe this is something that's like, you know, I feel like maybe in my past I believed it. I don't know where I'm at now. Or if the Lord is leading you to say, you know, it's time for me to say yes to my belief in him, what a great way to start 2018. You know what I mean? And if that's where you're at this morning and you're saying yes to Jesus, whether it's for that first time or saying, you know, I've been away a long time, it's time for me to say yes again. I want to encourage you, don't do it now, because we'll do some of this a little bit later. But there's cards in the back of your, you know, the chairs in front of you. Take it out and mark, you know, I said yes. You can throw your name on it. You can drop it in the plate. We'll be taking an offering at the end of the service. I'll tell more about that in a little bit. Drop it in the plate. You know, we'd love to know. It's really what it ends up being. So we know to pray for you. We'd love to follow up with you. But if this is where you're at, it's like, you know, it's time that I do that. Or maybe you've done it, so it's like, I've not been living that way. Which brings us to the last point. Sometimes, and I think this applies to all of us, whether now, whether in the past, or whether in the future, or maybe all three, there comes a time when it's time to take off the grave clothes. We have been made new. Jesus has basically taken this idea of death, and he's kicked it in the teeth. He stood at the grave, he said, roll away the stone, Lazarus come out, and he took that which was, in a sense, impossible, and he took death, and he gave it a vital blow, and he kicked death in the teeth. Satan, in some capacity, could relish in the fact that Lazarus was dead. People are mourning. Whoop-de-doo. It's more victory for me. And Jesus said, I don't think so. Not this time. I'm going to kick you in the teeth, and here comes Lazarus out. And Jesus has the power to do that. And this is a precursor. This is a picture just right now of what Jesus is going to do in just a few weeks. Because if he can raise someone else from the dead, I mean, that's impossible. The man's been dead for 4 days. He's going to do something even more impossible. And he's going to raise himself from the dead. Because he is the resurrection. But that leaves us in this point where if he's going to give death a kick in the teeth, are we going to continue to walk around with grave clothes on? And by grave clothes, I mean this idea of, okay, yeah, I believe that Jesus is who he says he is, but I'm not going to change my way of living. You know, and I'm not looking for perfection. That's you're missing that. But there's this reality that if Jesus had given me this new life, like he gave Lazarus, then why would I continue to go around acting dead? You follow that? And by walking around with grave clothes on, in a sense, I'm saying, yep, Jesus gave me new life, but guess what? I still look dead. Jesus did not give us new life to look dead. He gave us new life so that we can live a life that's free, live a life that is good, live a life that is abundant. And when we live that life that is abundant and free, and we share this gospel with other people, that is what Jesus is getting at. And so when we're tied up with sin, I know sin is tough. But Jesus has given us freedom. Let him shed those grave clothes and say, you know, I'm a new creation. You know, sometimes I put that stupid shroud on my head again, I'll take it off. Sometimes you put it on again, and well, take it off again. And continue to live your life by shedding the grave clothes. We're going to transition into a time of communion. And so I'm going to invite the elders forward, first and foremost. And what as we look at this, I want us to grasp this picture. So he raises Lazarus from the grave. He does that which is impossible. He brings life where there was death. He takes death and he gives him this mighty blow, a kick in the teeth. Well, there comes this time when there's actually a bigger blow, where he's going to take death, and not only is he going to give it a kick in the teeth, he's going to kill it. He's going to take death and he's going to kill death. Do you follow that? I mean, death will be no more. And we saw it when he says, I am the resurrection and the life. In other words, if someone believes in me, even though they die, yet will they live. That's just amazing. So as we celebrate what Jesus had done by giving that full victory, by conquering death permanently, I just ask that you reflect on that resurrection. What an amazing, amazing, beautiful picture. And as you reflect, as you hold the bread and you understand that this is his body that was broken, as you hold the cup, understand this was his blood that was shed so that he could give death that final blow. As you do that, I want you to reflect, Lord, okay, help me to understand how you mourn with me. Help me to understand that you're there with me. Help me to understand do I believe? Do I? I want to believe. like Martha said. I want to believe like that. And Lord, mostly, and I think this is really where it deals with me, and I think it probably resonates with a lot of you, I want to shed these grave clothes. I don't want to live dead anymore. Help me to shed these grave clothes. Wrestle with these things as you hold the cup. So as we read about in the scriptures, on the final night that Jesus was with his friends, he takes bread and he breaks it and he shares it with them. And he asks them that whenever you guys come together, whenever you take this bread and you share it, I want you to remember the fact that I have given you victory over death. So I ask, we practice open communion here at Alliance Church. And what that means is if you have a relationship with Jesus, if you have chosen to accept Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior, you are welcome to participate with us as we remember that. If you have not, today's a good day to start by saying yes to Jesus. And so what we do ask that you just hold the element, reflect on it until all have been served, and then we'll partake together upon the conclusion of everyone being served. So on that final night with his disciples, his closest friends, the ones that were with him when Lazarus was raised from the grave, they had seen it firsthand. And so he takes the bread and he shares it with them. And he says, "This is my body, which I will let be broken for you." And he challenges them to, when you eat this, just remember me. Remember what I have taught you. Remember, but mostly I think he says, I was getting at, remember the fact that I have given you life. Remember the fact that I have given you freedom. Remember the fact that death has no longer any power over you. So take off the grave clothes. Let's eat together. In the same way, Jesus then also took the cup. And then he referred to it as being a symbol of the blood that he would be shedding for all mankind, thus giving death its final blow. So it was at this final time that he shared with his friends how he would be killed, that he would be shedding his blood, still maybe a little bit cryptic for them, until he would raise again later 3 days, thus giving death its final blow. We have life because Jesus has given death that final blow. Let's drink together. I'd like to invite Kevin and the worship team up, as we will conclude the service with a song that we'll worship the Lord together with. And as a reminder, we receive a second offering on Sundays where we celebrate communion. This is a benevolent offering. This is intended to go towards congregants that may have special financial needs or even people in our community. And so there'll be ushers with plates at the outside of the door for those who feel led to give in that way. And then if you did take one of those Connect cards and you marked some things on it that you'd like us to know, if you'd like to have a contact, please feel free to drop that in those plates as well.